Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Happy Friday to all you wonderful pet lovers out there, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Note I said happy Friday morning and not Thursday morning because something came up and I was unable to podcast yesterday morning and like I normally do. And since out of thousands of you that listened to this podcast, only a few hundred actually tune in live, I figured it would be a good idea to just better late than never sort of thing and go ahead and podcast the next morning. I have so much to talk about all the time, and it just makes me so happy to share information and exchange ideas with you all. So my apologies for those of you who tune in live that I'm a day late, and for those of you who catch me by archive, the vast majority of the rest of you, this is just completely normal for you. So here we go. The title of today's episode is what supplements should I choose for my pets? And it was inspired in part by a listener email. The listener email isn't specifically about the supplements, but I think it is an important topic because there's so much out there and we need to figure out, A, is it necessary? B, is it something that works? And see, if it does work, are you getting good product? And how do you figure that out? How do you sift through all that? I got a few tips for you, but you know, first let's dive into this email and we will jump into the greater topic. Dear Dr. Roger, I am the proud mom of a one-year-old mini Bernedoodle spayed female puppy, and I am just smitten with her. I try to do everything I can to keep her happy and healthy, and I want her to be on this earth with me for as long as I can keep her. I'm wondering if you have any dietary recommendations in particular for this breed, and also would she benefit from any nutritional supplements? Right now, I feed her Royal Canin medium breed, having just switched her from the puppy to the adult formula. Thanks so much. I love your podcast. Nina from Laguna Beach. Something about California and mini Bernedoodles. I've only know of one other mini Bernedoodle on this world. I'm sure there's plenty more, but my buddy Steve Jordan, who is a personal trainer to celebrities out in Los Angeles, got his first dog a couple years ago, and it is a mini Bernedoodle. And the second person that I'm hearing has a mini Bernedoodle is also from California. So if anyone's wondering what a mini Bernedoodle is, it's basically a Bernese Mountain Dog, which is actually a pretty massive dog, crossbred with a standard poodle, which is, you know, the bigger poodles, not the little mini ones, and then over generations bred down to be smaller, and most of them fall in around 35, max 40-ish pounds, as opposed to the standard poodle, which was the original part of the crossbreed, that usually weigh in about 60, 65 pounds, and the Bernese Mountain Dog, which could be between 115 to 140 pounds. So selectively bred down. So as far as dietary recommendations for this particular breed, Nina, I don't want to disparage or judge or anything like that, but essentially you paid for a very expensive mutt. So a Bernedoodle is not a recognized AKC breed. And so we're also a crossbreed. We are selectively bred down for generations to get to that smaller size. So I really don't think there's any direct health conditions or health status that we can assign to this designer, quote unquote, breed at this point in time. So I think choosing a medium breed formula in general is the right thing to do, because at this point in time, it's just the breed is too new to know if there's any isms that come with that, or itises that come with that that particular breed. Like German Shepherds have been around since the beginning of time, seemingly, and there are some things associated with German Shepherds that there's actually German Shepherd-specific diets and specific nutritional needs, as one example. As far as choosing a pet food, boy, I could go down a big rabbit hole there, and I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to leave you with this tip. Three criteria by which I think people should be selecting good dog foods and cat foods. Number one, the bare minimum, you want them to be AAFCO certified, AAFCO. That is the American Association of Feed Control Officials. They are a watchdog agency that to have them come inspect your facility to certify that you are meeting their medium or minimal quality control standards. It's voluntary participation. So basically you're telling the world, hey, I'm voluntarily having my facility checked by this agency and getting their stamp of approval. So that's bare minimum. And I say bare minimum because AAFCO, you don't have to be that great to get that certification, but I think it is a bare minimum. Number two, you want to call the number, the customer service line of that pet food, and you want to ask if they have at least one veterinary clinical nutritionist on staff. A veterinary clinical nutritionist is a veterinarian like me, but they also have a PhD in nutrition. That is important. One veterinarian does not cut it. 10 veterinarians does not cut it. Why? I'm a veterinarian. I can't make a diet. I can read the label. I can look at ingredients. I can look at nutrient breakdowns. I can know the quality control standards of the company, look at their clinical data if they provide it, which most don't, but that's another story. And I can give my stamp of approval on a diet, but I can't make one. I can't bake all this stuff into a kibble and keep the integrity of the nutrients, not denaturing the carbohydrates and the proteins and the various nutrients. There's a very careful way to do that. I've seen it in process. It is not easy. Even in canned formulations, getting them into that mash or stew or puree or stew, better stated, it's very challenging, and you really got to know what you're doing. So clinical nutritionist is absolutely essential. And then lastly, you want to make sure, you want to ask them if they have published feeding trial data, meaning that they actually conduct feeding trials to claim or to prove the claims of the diet. And feeding trials consist of measuring ins and outs, bone density studies, longevity studies, overall health studies, hair coat quality, all kinds of health parameters that are monitored constantly. And that's done by the best companies. And those minimum feeding trials should be between 5 and 7 years, and they should be publicly available. If we ever hear that they don't want to give up proprietary information, that all that stuff is kept internal, but believe us, that what we're saying is true, red flag, I would not use that diet. Proprietary blends are a big red flag, and we're going to talk about that with supplements in just a moment. So go by those three criteria. I don't like to be a cheerleader for any one diet, but just follow those three criteria. By the way, Nina Royal Canin follows those criteria, so you chose well. I will say that. So let's move on to supplements. So there is literally billions of millions, I would say this fair, of different types of supplement brands for different conditions with different claims. It could be herbal, it could be joints, so chondroitin and glucosamine, MSM, things like that. It could be for skin, so zinc, omega-3 fatty acids. I could go on and on here. Relaxation and stress, that could go back to a number of things, one of them being herbal, but also pheromone therapy. There's a lot of different things that these companies are aiming to do to catch your business, to manage your condition du jour, or to just overall boost the the health of your pet. And there's, on that last point, boy, oh boy, there's like a gazillion of those. And I'm just going to talk about one real quick. hopefully they don't listen to this podcast or going to want to sue me, but the funniest one in my experience is Dinovite. The claims on this thing, I mean, your dog is basically going to throw on a cape and start flying like Superman and live forever, by the way. I'm exaggerating, of course, but the claims by this company are just so funny. But I had this really good client, really good guy, loved his dogs, and he said, Doc, I found this amazing vitamin called Dinovite, and I just really like you to take a look at it. You might want to start recommending it because it just looks amazing. So I go to the website and I check out Dinovite. This is years ago. It's still out there, by the way. And I, you know, don't see anything really informational. Just a lot of claims. And so, you know, not even really ingredients. So I called up the company and I said, hey, I'm just wondering, you know, you don't have a list of all of the nutrients that are in this magic vitamin that help dogs so much. What's in this? It's so special. Oh, we can't divulge that, sir. It's trade secrets. And I said, oh, okay. What data do you have, you know, to prove all this? Do you have blind studies with placebo comparisons, 5 to 10 years of data that we can take a look at? Yes, we do, sir. I'm like, great. Can you send that to me or point me in the direction? No, sir. That's also trade secrets. We can't divulge that. I'm like, but you know, you can arguably not give up your blend. But I think health data, I think, you know, if that data is favorable, you really need to show that to the world, because look, I'm a veterinarian, and if you got this magic vitamin, boy, I'll promote the heck out of it for you, but I gotta see that data. I just can't take your word for it. Sorry, sir, we can't provide that. And I just said, okay, so even though I'm a vet and I could potentially really help your business by promoting you, if I, you know, see your data and I can profess it to the world, no, sir, I'm sorry, that's just not going to happen. I'm like, okay, great. All right, well, thanks. You just answered a lot for me. Got off the phone, told this to my client. I'm like, look, you have no idea what you're giving your dog. It could be sugar pill, for all we know. They won't tell us. It could be, you know, does it work? We don't know. You're spending a heck of a lot of money for it, though. Like, my personal opinion, I would just as soon go out and get yourself some pet tabs. You know, they're made by a legit veterinary pharmaceutical, and we know what's in there. We know that what they say is in there is in there, and yeah, just you pay less for it. So that's Dinovite, by the way, one of the biggest scams I've seen. But Dinovite's like a dime a dozen as far as like scams. You know, I mean, there are just so many out there that are just like that. It's just amazing, and they prey on the Ninas of the world that, you know, really, really love their animals and want to do the best by them and are just always looking for what's the next best thing I could do to help the health of my pet. So, Nina, back to your email. I would say if you have a good, well-balanced nutrition and everything that your dog needs is in that food, you really don't need to do anything at this age. I say up to 5 years old, you are doing just fine if you have a good, well-balanced pet food. That goes for dogs and cats. The supplementation is not necessary. So what are you looking for as far as making sure that the health is generally good? Well, number one, look at your dog every day. Look at your cat every day. Look at the coat quality. Is it as shiny as it used to be? And shiny isn't always a measure of health as far as the animal's concerned, because not all dogs have shiny coats. Some have more like flat type coats, or even even dull, and that's kind of their breed standard. You look at like an Irish Wolfhound, for example. They kind of have dull, curlyish hair coats, but they're not shiny by their definition. But you look at like an Irish Setter, yeah, those things shine, and that's just their breed standard. So I would, when I say shiny hair coat, by comparison to what it looked like when, I always say the patient, but when the dog or cat was at their healthiest, which is usually in that first year to year and a half of life when, you know, health conditions are generally not starting to catch up with them. You know, take a snapshot of that. Take pictures. Take a memory in your head of what that coat quality looks like. It's not just the character of it as far as the shine quality is concerned. What is the thickness of the coat? You know, is it as full as it once was? Are there flakes in the skin and there didn't used to be? So things like that is that's a really good start, is just the hair coat and the quality of it. Secondly, what is the body condition of the pet? Is the musculature in order? Are we overweight? Are we underweight? What do the eyes look like? Are the whites of the eyes nice and white, or are they kind of bloodshot? Very basic, simple things you could take a look at. How's our gait? Are we walking well? Is the trot normal? Are we running decently? Are we normally fatigued after exercise? Are we exceptionally and abnormally fatigued after exercise? So these are all things that you can observe. And then, of course, there's the yearly examination you do with your veterinarian. We start with the kitten and puppy. We do visits at, generally, I like to start seeing the kittens and puppies at 8 weeks, and then we do a 14-week, and then we do an 11-week and then a 14-week. And then there might be an additional visit after that if we're having trouble getting rid of worms or something like that. But in that time period, we're watching growth curves. We're making sure that there's no development of congenital disease. And then after that last visit, at some point in between that and then, you know, the what I call the big girl or the big boy visit, when they're adult pets, we're going to spay and neuter them in between. But the next time I get my hands on that pet, they're going to be, you know, a year plus years old, and I'm going to have the opportunity to examine that patient from nose to tail to confirm from my end that, hey, heart and lungs sound good. Our joints feel nice and good, nice and smooth. There's good range of motion. There's no laxity. Let me watch them trot around a little bit. Hey, you know what? We have a normal gait. Let me check the ears, the eyes, make sure everything's good. And that's a very important aspect of determining the health of your pet and if any supplementation is necessary. Check the stools. Are the stools normal? Every now and then there's an aberration. I have a Labrador Retriever, and about on a weekly basis, she gets into something she's not supposed to. She's got an obsession with palm seeds, and palm seeds fall occasionally. and she loves to eat those, and they upset her colon, and you know she has some loose stool, and lo and behold, oh, a palm seed came out too. So I'm not talking about that, but you know, between her dietary indiscretion, Stella has normal stools, and shit's very consistent for her. So does your dog have normal stools on a consistent basis? Does your cat have the same? Are urination patterns normal, or are we urinating more frequently than normal? Drinking habits, are they normal, or are we drinking more than typical? That can signify dietary issues or underlying health issues. So generally speaking, you're on a good diet that you and your veterinarian have agreed on. It agrees with your pet, and the pet is generally in good shape up to about 5 years old. Honestly, supplementation is not necessary. Everything your dog and cat needs to sustain good health and a healthy homeostasis metabolically, it's all in that food, and really that stuff is not generally necessary. So that's the first point I'm going to make. Generally speaking, once we hit 5 years old, when I'm thinking of medium to giant breed sized dogs, so that would be Nina, your dog is a medium sized dog. So I'm thinking, you know, over, let's say, 30 pounds, and then all the way up through our large breed dogs, up through the giant breeds, you know, like Great Danes. In that weight category, at 5 years of age, whether we have any orthopedic disease or not, I'm going to recommend starting those pets on, or those dogs on, a joint health supplement. Like I said, even if they're not showing any signs of orthopedic problems, because we want to be proactive on that end. And specifically, I want a good joint health supplement. There's a few out there that are good. Again, I don't want to be a cheerleader for any one product. There is one product that is my favorite, but I don't want to be that person, because I'm not a spokesperson for any company. But here's what I would recommend. Consult with your veterinarian. There are so many joint crap supplements out there that nobody, folks, is paying attention to. The FDA doesn't monitor that industry. And so there's a whole lot of garbage out there, and you're spending money for nothing. And if it is in there, maybe it is not processed and put in the chew properly because they don't know what they're doing or they don't care. And so the stuff might be in there, but it's not in a form that your dog or cat can absorb. So cats, we don't worry about them orthopedically quite as much. Supplementing them can be challenging, but it's not a bad idea that by 8 years old, when cats are considered officially seniors, you can, there's some joint products out there. There's some that are in gel form that they'll like lick off your hand or lick off their paw. Those to me are the easiest to administer and minimally stressful to the cat. So, you know, that's one of the things I'd be proactive about. 5 years old for medium to giant breed dogs, start them on a good comprehensive joint chew. And 8 years old for a cat. I would consider the little dogs, so under 30 pounds, consider them like a cat. You know, they're officially seniors at 8 years, and starting the joint supplements at that age would be a good idea. But yeah, definitely chat with your veterinarian about it. The ones that I'm going to trust are companies that have a name behind them that legitimately sell other pharmaceuticals that, you know, if they were found to have a random analysis done, they would have a lot to lose because they're bigwigs in the industry. And if they were faking a supplement, that would be very, very bad. And there's a few companies out there that do make really good quality products, and they have a reputation on the line to not come through with those. So ask your vet. You know, you don't necessarily have to go by what your vet's selling in his office. I actually don't carry anything in my office. I tell them, this is my favorite product. You know, go pop on Chewy.com and buy it. That way, you know I have no skin in the game as far as that's concerned. I hate the retail business. I sell as little product as I possibly can. That includes heartworm prevention, flea prevention. I'm going to make my recommendation, but I don't want to carry this stuff. Carrying inventory stinks. It's a waste of my time. I don't need that that revenue. So, you know, you could ask your vet, hey, is there things necessarily that you don't carry that you may recommend? And, you know, just have that conversation. So that's the joint health side of it. If we start life with, we're a chondrodystrophic breed, so that would be your, like, short, stubby-legged, long dogs, you know, so, like, your dachshunds, your basset hounds, yeah, you may want to start them, like, at 3 years old or even younger if they walk really weird because they're all messed up in their anatomy. And certainly any dog that starts life with hip dysplasia, elbow dysplasia, any orthopedic conditions that they experience at a young age, yeah, you want to start that sooner rather than later. But for everybody else, go by the previous criteria that I talked about. There are legitimately dogs and cats out there that have gut problems. They might have some irritable bowel, so, you know, definitely dietary sensitivities. They may have legitimate inflammatory bowel disease. Inflammatory bowel disease is going to be on the level of what we consider autoimmune disease. So it's disease where in response to contact with proteins and assimilation of proteins, there's more than just triggered sensitivity. It's triggering an immune response where the body's own immune cells attack the gut apparatus and the lining of the gut itself. So on the human side, most of us are familiar with at least one person that has Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. In dogs, we'll see upper gastrointestinal inflammatory bowel disease. In cats, in dogs, we can see ulcerative colitis, we can see lymphangiectasia. Any of the above are going to benefit from a really good probiotic. And then again, probiotic is going to be just like any other supplementation. Just always remember, you want to get a recommendation and consultation with your vet. There again, there is one product that I really like. The microbiome of the gut is so important. The microbiome refers to the good bacterial environment that lives in the gut, is active in the gut, is part of the immune system of the gut, and is essential in digestion. And when these inflammatory diseases occur, those good bacteria get crowded out by bad bacteria. And so inoculating the gut with a very high quality, high concentration probiotic is a very good idea and kind of an essential component in this day and age, in my opinion, in managing the disease. There may be a lot more that needs to be done, but in the short term and long term, your pet's going to benefit from the probiotic. One of the things I will recommend clearly is that the microbiome is a lot more diversified, number one, in terms of the lines and species of bacteria. But secondly, there's a lot more mass to it than we once believed. So the microbiome environment of a person has actually been quantified as far as the actual mass of it. And it was found to be on average 2 kilograms. For those of you that don't like metric, my American listeners, we will never go metric. I don't know why, but at any rate, that's another conversation. That translates to almost 5 pounds. Somewhere between 4 and 5 pounds. That is insane. These little microscopic organisms that live in our gut are about 5 pounds worth of mass. It's just crazy. So previously, probiotics were traditionally dispensed with populations in the millions, but we now know we want populations actually in the billions to truly be effective. And you don't need to there are pharmaceuticals that have prescription grade probiotic in the billions, but you don't have to pay a pharmaceutical price if you do your research properly. Your vet talked to you first. Believe it or not, even a lot of vets are not completely signed in on tuned in on the billions per dose versus the millions per dose. So have the conversation, but certainly understand that the reason I'm privy to it is a couple of years ago, I did a gastroenterology probiotic lecture put on by a gastroenterologist that specifically talked about this. And so not every veterinarian was in that talk. There was only about 200 of us in there. So there's thousands of veterinarians out there. So little by little, I think more are buying into that. But you want probiotic in the billions. You want a legitimate veterinary pharmaceutical that makes it. And I think it's a very good idea for these animals that have troubled guts. As we get on in years, I would go by the same criteria as, healthy dogs and the joint health supplements. So again, we're a young dog or cat and they kind of have bowel problems right out of the gate. Certainly you get those guys on a probiotic immediately, but if they're otherwise healthy and doing great, stools are normal, bowel seems healthy, those medium to giant breed dogs, I'd throw them on a probiotic, about 5 years old. And for our little dogs under 30 pounds and our cats, I'd throw them on a probiotic starting about 8 years of age. And that's being preemptive. We're reaching a point in those lives, respectively, where they are, the gut ain't quite what it used to be. Perfect example. A lot of dogs don't need their anal sacs squeezed or expressed is the proper term, manually emptied, basically. Up until middle age. In case there's some of you out there that don't know what the anal sacs are. Well, there's these little grape-like structures that live just inside the rectum, just before the exit area, and they collect secretions from the anal glands that live within the walls of the rectum, and they collect this fluid. And what's normally supposed to happen is, cats have these too, by the way, the feces travels through that area of the rectum, and it presses on those anal sacs, and through these little ducts, that fluid kind of excretes and coats the feces, and it gives the feces a distinct scent. So it's a scent organ to mark the feces of this particular animal. And so it's kind of an inherited ancestry from their ancient ancestors, the wolves and other various canids, where the feces is, they come across feces and they could sniff it and know it may belong to their pack or not belong to their pack. And in the case of felines, they have it, even though they don't, their wild ancestors don't live in packs. They can know that if they stumble across feces, is it my own or is it that of somebody else? Is there somebody else invading my territory? So the reason that mechanism can start to fail at 5 years of age and older is because the stools ain't what they used to be. They're not as bulked up as they used to be. The contractile apparatus of the gut isn't what it used to be. And so we need to go up there and kind of manually express them as part of what we regularly do as a medical maintenance treatment. And so what you can do to help with that and a myriad of other things is just start, promoting gut health by throwing a probiotic in that food and inoculating that gut with good bacteria and maintaining good bowel health. It's ever so important. 70%+ of the immune system of the body of a dog and cat lies within the gut. So a healthy gut is so important. So important. So those are good timelines there. Let's talk about skin real quick as a final topic. I'm just going to take a quick drink of water. Give me 1 second. Thank you for that. Let's get a little parched when I'm talking. So the, So I live in the allergy capital of the world, also the flea capital of the world, not the world. I misspoke. Of the United States, of the continental United States. The allergy problems here, because we have such a densely organic environment of so much foliage in the high humidity, there's never a seasonal culling of the foliage like you have up north. And there's also just major flea issues here. You put that all together, some days I feel like I'm a dermatologist. It's like I'm treating skin all day. And a lot of these skin problems, especially in, these highly selectively bred dogs that are popular. So, every Tom, Dick, and Harry's breeding them and they're not ethically breeding, and there's all kinds of unwanted recessive genetic baggage that goes along line after line of puppies, like French bulldogs, English bulldogs. I could go on, but those are two of my worst, where we're seeing skin disease already, when their puppy's only 4 or 5 months old. Those guys, you want to be proactive. And I'm talking any breed, by the way, not just Frenchies and bullies. I'm talking like any dog, even if it's just a straight up mutt from the pound. If they're presenting with skin issues at a young age, I don't care, how old they are. Let's get them on a good quality omega-3 fatty acid supplement. So omega-3 fatty acids, what do? Well, they're not just good for skin, they're good for everything, but they are fantastic for skin. I always say they're good for treating any itis in the body. So vasculitis, neuritis, dermatitis, folliculitis, meningitis, name your itis. It is good for managing inflammation in any tissue. What it does is it blocks inflammatory pathways. I'm going to bore you a little bit with science. There is a pathway, one of the primary inflammatory pathways of the body, called the arachidonic acid pathway. It's triggered by inflammation initially, so injury to the body of some kind or detection of an antigen. So let's say let's say pine pollen is inhaled and the body doesn't like that the antigenic protein within the pine pollen, suddenly the arachidonic acid pathway is unleashed to try to deal with that antigen. And that's where allergy comes from. And that's all manner of allergy. And so what the end point of the arachidonic acid pathway is inflammatory products that they do their damage on the tissues in an ill-fated attempt to help the body. They're actually hurting the body. In the, you know, and these are going to differ depending on the tissues. You're going to have a pathway that leads to certain products called prostaglandins within the joint that causes joint inflammation. As it pertains to skin, you're going to get activation of what are called mast cells, and mast cells contain granules that have a molecule called histamine in them, and histamine does its thing. We're all familiar with antihistamines that are meant for blocking allergy, and specifically as it pertains to skin and hay fever. So talking about skin specifically in the arachidonic acid pathway, what omega-3 fatty acids do is they actually will take the arachidonic acid pathway and divert it in another direction that leads to a dead end. And that dead end has inert molecules that do nothing. And so it's basically a diversion, and it doesn't allow the full pathway to get to its completion. Is it foolproof? No. Some arachidonic acid pathway is going to get to the finish line. But with omega-3 fatty acids, it's a lot of it isn't, and it's going to really help that patient. So is it the only thing that needs to be done? Sometimes. Lots of times there's more to be done. But the more you can get that on board, the more comfortable the patient's going to be and the less medication you have to give. So I'm a big fan of omega-3 fatty acids. As it pertains to the skin and hair coat, omega-3 fatty acids also directly condition and nourish the hair coat. So, phenomenal thing to do if your dog or cat has chronic skin issues as it pertains to allergies. You want to be very careful with omega-3 fatty acids, though, because if they're not packaged and processed and packaged properly, they can oxidize. And so I'm sure many of you out there have taken fish oil supplements and you get fish burps. Well, if you're getting fish burps, you are getting oxidized product. You should not get fish burps. Fish burps come from conversion from omega-3 to omega-6 and omega-9. Omega-6 and omega-9 don't do the same thing as omega-3. Omega-3, that's your Mac Daddy of fatty acids as it pertains to reduction of inflammation. So you want to make sure that it's not oxidized product. So I'm going to call out a brand that's terrible. And I don't think I'll be on their radar, and I don't think they're going to come after me and sue me. The Walmart Equate brand. Walmart, anything. Crap. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that have, you know, taken the Walmart fish oil supplements, and they're like, it's disgusting. I keep, you know, fish burping. I'm like, because it's crap. They're not doing it right. So you can actually get prescription-level omega-3 fatty acid fish oil supplements. But once again, you can get pharmaceutical grade without paying the pharmaceutical price. You just have to figure out what products, plural, are going to fill that criteria. And again, a conversation with your veterinarian will get you there. And again, I also have a favorite product in mind. This particular company has a human and pet division, so all my pets are on this, and my kids and I are also on it. Omega-3 fatty acids are known to contribute to brain health in people, so I like having my kids on them as they're developing, and they've been on them for years. I am on them because I am in my 40s, and my body ain't what it used to be, and I want to remain healthy for as long as I can, and I want to reduce inflammation of all kinds. Even though I don't have any chronic diseases per se, you know, things just ache a little more than they used to, and wounds heal a little bit slower than they used to, a little bit stiffer getting out of bed in the morning, and Got to work twice as hard for half the results in the gym. So, you know, I think at my stage in life, omega-3 is a great idea. My expertise is not people, though. That's my people opinion. That's not my expert opinion, okay? Just want to be clear there. I'm talking about your pets. So when should we start them on omega-3? If they have skin problems, immediately. If they don't have skin problems, let's go by that same criteria that we talked about for probiotics and we talked about for joint health supplements. It's going to be around 5 years of age for medium to large or giant breed dogs, north of 30 pounds. Small dogs, south of 30 pounds, and cats, we want to start the omega-3 at about 8 years of age. And, you know, that's kind of the supplement breakdown. Now, there's all kinds of other stuff out there. There's turmeric, and there's relaxation type stuff, the different herbal remedies and things of that nature. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I really wanted to just focus on, you know, the big three things that we are mostly laser focused off or focused on in pets and as far as more exotic supplementation items out there like turmeric and other various things. I'm not going to get into that. It's not to say that those things don't have benefit. It's just the actual official, you know, proper scientific method study on those types of things are just very much still in progress. They're relatively new. No, you know, they haven't been taken as seriously as they should have, in my opinion. I don't really like to reserve opinions until I get good sound data that it's something that we should be doing. But those other three things, plenty of data to support them. That's all I got for today. I'm sorry I'm a day late once again. Keep those listener emails coming. Nina, thank you for your input. You definitely sparked a really important episode today because I get this question asked a lot in the exam room, especially with new pet owners. And kudos to you for wanting to take the best possible care you can of that Bernedoodle. I am sure she is beautiful. My friend Steve's dog is absolutely gorgeous. He's got a Japanese wife, literally from Japan, and they named her Yama. And Yama is just a lovely dog. So no offense to me basically telling you that you got a very expensive mutt there, because that's okay. That's what you wanted. You're clearly in love with her, and you're going to take great care of her. So I will be with you this coming Thursday morning, unless something crazy comes up. I am a practicing veterinarian after all, and sometimes I get called in for emergencies and various surgeries that I'm the only one among the two practices that's qualified to do, and that's got to come first. But I will make every effort to be on time to talk to all of you good people. Until next time, everybody, have a wonderful rest of your day.